Hi, thanks for coming.
谢谢您的来临。
As you may know already,
Phil, I don't think this is the last one.
Mine's not on.
It's not that one.
How do I make this one? Okay, is this better? Okay.
听得到吗？还是听得到？
Okay, great. Thank you for coming. And thank you for coming.
谢谢各位的
朋友。Okay, so the topic of today's talk, as you know, if you look at any of the advertising for it, is the three bodies of the Buddha, which...
今天的题目就是 Four Essential.
All right, this is a kind of a strange name when you first look at it. For studying Buddhism, you might wonder, what do they mean, three bodies of the Buddha? What is that?
如果不很熟悉佛教的话，你也许会觉得好奇怪，怎么为什么是有佛有三个身？
Well, what it means, and you can see the, what they are, Dharmakaya, that's the Sanskrit. Kaya is the word that is translated as body when this teaching is discussed. One thing you should know, though, is that Kaya doesn't really necessarily mean body in the sense of a physical body. It can also mean just a collection of things or a group of things. So the Dharmakaya could be the Dharma body, but it could also beThe collection of dharmas, or a group of dharmas, something along those lines. And the same sort of thing can happen with each of the three.
这三个身就是写在这个白板上。第一个叫 Dharmakaya， 中文就是法身。那你看每一个都有这个 Kaya 后头，这个 Kaya 就是梵语的身体的意思。它不一定是说一个人的身体，而也许是一种集合。比方说这个法身就是法的集合。
Right.
你听得到我？我讲的你听得到？大声一点，对不对？这个不是很有用，所以我自己要提高我自己声音。好。
Okay. Alright, well, what I want to do to start out is what is probably the most efficient method is to just go through, this is Shifu's book, Orthodox Chinese Buddhism. It sets out Shifu's understanding of the Dharma.
这是用一个比较有效率的方法来开始，我先要介绍这本书，这本也有中文的翻译。正信佛教，就是英文中文都很像，差不多。
Okay, well, these terms are all defined in here, and I want to work through these definitions with you. I'll try to explain them as I go. It won't be just my reading something you could read yourself.
这些名词全部都是在这本书里面，是我想。开始我先解释一下这些名词都在书上，所以我就是看书就解释一下我要用的要讲的名词。
Alright, here it goes. This is in the English language. There exists a plethora of terms and explanations for the various bodies of a Buddha. A simplified explanation common in contemporary Taiwan followsSo here it comes. There are three kinds of bodies of a Buddha. One is the Dharma body, or Dharmakaya, which is a synonym for ultimate reality or truth personified.
好，我呢现在开始，我先解释一下这个法，我的三身。第一个身就是法身。那实际上有好多好多解释法，我要用的解释法就是在现在的台湾所比较用到的。那第一个就是解释这个法身， 这个法身的意思就是最后整个实在说实在就是正化而就是变定人的正化，那是等于这个再插个头忘了怎么说，插个头哦，如来就是跟如来真正如来的意思。
I want to digress here for a moment and tell you all that Robert is really doing a wonderful service for us today. when I asked him to translate, he said, well, okay, but please try to supply me with a list of the terms and so on that you're going to use so I can know how to, you know, I can figure out what to say for him. And I said, okay, but if Robert knows me a little bit now, I change things right up till the very end. That's just the way I have to do it. I can't seem to... I don't have another method. That's all I can seem to be able to do. And so a lot of this stuff, Robert didn't know this was going to happen. So, and these are pretty difficult English words, some of them. Plethora, that's a difficult word. Anyway.
他就是要说对不起，因为我也许没有好好的准备，因为他就是前几天就告诉我要做翻译，所以我就要求他把那些他有用什么特别名词，那个英文给我，如果我忘记中文怎么说，我就可以查。所以他就给我，但是今天早上还是奥数已经改变了，他有其他的名词也是要用，所以如果我想不出来，要先说一句对不起。
All right, we'll be silent. Okay. Okay, well, let's go back to this now. What I want you to focus on is how deep and profound this concept is. The concept of a Dharma body is just about one of the most fundamental ideas in Mahayana Buddhism, certainly. Notice, it's a synonym for ultimate reality. Ultimate reality, or truth personified.
我希望你们可以特别着重到这些名词多深，它的意思多深啊、比方说这个法身，它就是说就是好像把涅槃这个意思当作人，就是在人的身上代表这个最后最大的实际的情况，就是我们说涅槃。
So this seems to be saying that there is a senseIn which the Buddha is the ultimate truth. So it's a little strange if you start to think about it, and it tells you something about how Mahayana Buddhism in particular views the world. The Buddha is not just a being, a human being or a celestial being, but the Buddha is, in a certain sense, the truth itself.
所以这个意思好像是说佛就是含这个真正的正义在他的这个法身里。
OK, now you notice they've got some in the definition there are some synonyms. I want to go through these too because these are all a hall of fame words in the Mahayana pantheonSuchness, emptiness, the kind of garb.
这个你还可以看那个白板上去那个英文字，就是同义词的意思。这同义词的这三个 suchness, emptiness 跟 the kind of garb， 就是佛教上非常重要的观念。
Okay, now suchness is defined here as the unchanging underlying reality behind.Phenomenal appearances.
This is right here. This is the first one is the 意思，就是说所有的现象的基本真正的义。
All right. Now you've all probably heard that term suchness if you've been studying, listening to Buddha talk, Dharma talks, and so on for a while, studying the Dharma, that term comes up. So what does it mean? It's talking about some underlying reality that lies beneath all phenomena that we experience. Here is a phenomenon, Here is a phenomenon. They're different as phenomena, but the underlying reality of both of them is suchness.
所以任何现象，像这瓶水或这两本书，都是现象。现象每个现象都有这个真如做基础，就是这个意思。
All right. Now this next one, I bet you've never heard of this, emptiness. Okay. If you've studied the certainly Mahayana Buddhism, but for any period of time whatsoever, you've heard of emptiness. Okay, now what is it? Well, one thing you should understand about emptiness is that in this same book here, in our question and answer section, one of the questions is, what is the ultimate truth of Buddhism? Shifu's answer is, the ultimate truth of Buddhism is the empty nature of phenomena and persons.
下一个词 emptiness 就是空，是没有听过的这个字啊，有没有？大概是有。这个空就是最后一个真理，就是他们所讲的那个真理。那有一个人在这本书上有一个地方叫问答。那有一个问答，这个有的人问师父佛教最高不变的真理是什么？啊，师父回答说是空，所有的现象的基本性质都是空的。
All right, now emptiness is a true of many terms in the Buddhist studies. Emptiness is used slightly differently in different contexts. So to really know what's going on, you sort of have to know what the context is.
这个词空要看上下文，为什么呢？因为有的时候用的意思不一定百分之百的一样，所以你要知道空是什么意思，你必须知道是什么上下文用这个名词空。
All right, now with respect to individual phenomena, when we talk about the emptiness of phenomena, we're talking about a characteristic of the phenomena. There's a very basic teaching, which is in the original Buddhism, in source Buddhism, is called the three seals of the Dharma, or the three characteristics of experience.
You just said it.
Oh, okay.
Say it again.
Yes.
All right. 对不起，太多了。
Senior moment.
Yes.
Yes. Senior moment in two languages. Okay. When we talk about individual things, and you know the heart sutra. When the Bodhisattva Avalokiteshvara was coursing in the deep part of the Paramita, he perceived that all five skandhas are empty, thereby transcending all suffering. What is the purpose of Buddhism? It's to help human beings transcend suffering. Remember the story of Buddha's life? He did what he did because he suddenly realized there's all this suffering out there. He didn't know it, and suddenly he knew it, and he went, oh, gotta do something about this. The whole thing comes out of that, right? So he's trying to eliminate suffering. Now, the part super tells us a way to eliminate suffering. It's to learn what this empty nature of things is and to try to live our lives in conformity with that
understanding.心生般若波罗蜜多时，照见如愿皆空。那这个空是什么？本来说像这瓶水，它的本性就是空，空就是 它的性质，它最基本的，什么都是空的。那你要解放，你求解放，你怎么会解放呢？你怎么会开示啊？你要自己经历这个空性到底是什么。
All right, now what is this empty nature of all phenomena? All five skandhas are empty. That's just another way of talking of saying basically every phenomenon that you experience has this characteristic of emptiness.
所以这个空性到底是什么？像无蕴皆空，意思就是说，任何现象，它的基本特性就是空的。
Well, emptiness in this context can be thought of as having two aspects. One is impermanence. Everything you experience is impermanent, isn't it? Right?
那这个空有两方面，一个是不永久，任何事情都是永远存在的。
All right, and the second one is what's called no self.What that really means is that the things that we experience do not have some sort of essence that is separate and distinct from the rest of reality.
第二方面是无我。那无我的意思是说，任何东西、任何现象，它没有这种跟其他无关的、完全独立的一个本质交流。
Now the reason for that is that everything is subject to causes and conditions.
为什么呢？因为什么都是跟因缘有关。
There's nothing in any of these things that doesn't change when causes and conditions change appropriately. Everything will change.
这些现象里面没有任何东西与因缘有任何变化，它不变。
Okay, but now we're using emptiness here in a slightly different way. Emptiness is being used as a synonym for the sort of ultimate ground of reality. What is the bottom line of the universe? What do things actually come out of? Sometimes that's referred to as emptiness when you're reading.In Buddhist texts, when you see that word emptiness, ask yourself, well, are they talking about the characteristics of a particular phenomenon, or are they talking about the underlying reality of all phenomena?
所以这个空这个字意思也是说好像宇宙或者任何现象的最后的真理是什么东西，就是说它基础基本上有什么真理让它存在，这个就是空。
In Shunryu Suzuki's book, Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, it's one of the first Zen-oriented books I read. And one of the things he says, everything that exists is just a flashing out of emptiness.
有一位日本法师非常出名，他说所有存在的东西都是空的一种发光。
I didn't know what he meant.
我实际上不知道他是什么意思。
But I do now a little bit. See, he's referring to this meaning of the term emptiness. He's saying what exists is arising out of something or other, which is defined in different ways by different schools. But there's something that.The universe, all experiences arising out of. Some people say, but sometimes I say, well, it's arising out of emptiness.
现在我好像知道一点他的意思是什么。他的意思是说，所有的现象都是从一个地方发出来的。这个地方就是叫空。
Okay. Now the last one, Tathagatagarbha.You may have heard of that too, you probably have, if you've been studying here for a while. The Chan school is what is called a Tathagatagarbha school. It generally would be classified in this group of schools that have the Tathagatagarbha idea in their philosophy. Tathagatagarbha is sometimes called Buddha nature. Okay? This is a reference to the basic idea, you've heard it before. Everybody, every sentient being, has within him or herself the capacity to become a Buddha. We can all become Buddhas, right? That's that capacity is called the Tathagatagarbha. It's also sometimes as talked about in slightly different ways, but I think you've all heard of it, and it is the Buddha nature that we all have.
第三个就是如来藏，如来藏可以说就是我们每一个众生的佛性，就是让我们可以变佛的这种本质，这种现象。所以什么都有这种如来藏。
Okay, pretty heavy, huh? Yeah.
相当深的，对不对？
I love this stuff.
好喜爱。
Yeah. I'm a nerd for this stuff. Okay, well anyway, okay, well that's the first one, Dharmakaya. Now the thing to remember is, and this will be helpful to you if you do any reading in this kind of material, there are several different words that are used to refer to this same basic idea, which is the sort of, what's the underlying reality of everything? Sometimes it's Dharmakaya, they might say suchness, they might say emptiness, sometimes the Tathagatagarbha. You see all of these things. So, always remember that that's one of the possibilities.
所以这些名词，不管是法身，或是真如，或是空，或是如来藏，他们都是形容每一个现象，它最后最基本的真理。
All right, well, let's go now to Sambhogakaya. This one's a lot simpler to talk about. All right, this is usually referred to as a reward body. The idea is that this is a Buddha's magnificent, wonderful body obtained as karmic recompense for his immense virtue, equipped with all the standard marks of a Buddha. As you may know, they talk about a Buddha as having 32 major marks and 80 minor marks. These are like any Buddha you see is supposed to have all these marks. You know, it looks a certain way. And one of these Buddhas, reward body Buddhas, would have these marks. And they are often living in a pure land, you know, Buddha land, pure land, right? And we have two here that are very famous that you've heard of. Amitabha is one of these, okay? Also Medicine Buddha. Medicine Buddha is another one. And, you know, there are lots of others.
这第二个这个报身就是讲他一个佛，因为他已经成佛，因为他已经知道真正的真理，他可以得到这么很了不起非常好的一种身体，这个就是报身。报就像报恩或是得到任何什么奖，差不多可以这么说，这种现象。那任何佛他还有三十二，有一个名字，对不起，我忘了。
三十二下。
八十随心好。谢谢法师的帮我们。如果你是一个佛，你都会表示出来这些相。所以这个第二个这个报身，就是讲佛的这种身。
Okay, and now the last one is the Nirmanakaya. That's sometimes called an emanation body. That's what we have in here. Emanation body, a Buddha's physical body that manifests where it can be of most benefit to sentient beings. And as an example, is Shakyamuni. This is sometimes called a transformation body. We'll see that title too.
先还没讲这个之前忘了说这种报身，报身也是讲这个佛的那个极乐国，像阿弥陀佛或是药佛这种两个佛，大概大家比较熟悉，这个就是他的那个报身的一种，也是一种现象。现在最后一个是化身，化身就是一个佛的真正的会在我们的世间的身体，这种化身就是说一个佛会有这个化身，如果他要来开示，他要度众生，他都会有这种化身。
Okay, so that's Shakyamuni, and that's what Shakyamuni was doing when he was in this world that we live in now, 2,500 years ago, whenever it was. He was acting in the role of an emanation body or transformation body.
他在我们人间就是他的化身，他在化身就是给我们开示，给我们讲法，所以留下来的我们这个佛法就是这个我们这个佛他的化身。
Okay, now one thing you should understand is that this version of the three bodies of Buddha is pretty much a Mahayana version.
我们该知道一件事情，这个佛的三身就是北方佛教的一种观念，比较是北方佛教。
The definition of Dharmakaya in particular is pretty much Mahayana. When you read the source Buddhist materials, they don't talk about suchness, the Bhagavad-garbha, that kind of stuff. They don't talk about that in those teachings.
特别是法身这些名词，这三个名词，都是在这个北川经，那个原始佛教的经，根本提不到这三个名词。
They do have there's a sort of a version of the three bodies of the Buddha that does occur in some of the source Buddhist materials. The Sarvastivadins were one of the early schools, but they've died out, but their writings still exist, so we know quite a bit about them. They had a type of three bodies of the Buddha idea. But so then the Dharma, when they talk about the Dharma body, they meant basically the teachings themselves, the teachings of the Buddha. That was how they referred to, you know, the Dharma body, which is a little different from suchness, emptiness, the fact of the Dharma.
原始佛教实际上也有讲一点，提到一点。我们知道这些原始佛教这些宗派已经不存在，但是他们留下了不少这些经，那里面他们也是讲到这些三身，特别是这个法身，但是他们讲的法身没有用到这三个名词，他们的意思是说佛的法身就是这个佛法，这个法所造的一个法身。
Maybe more importantly, in a certain sense, if you think about the history of Buddhism, the source Buddhists don't really think of Shakyamuni as being an emanation from some other Buddha. They don't talk about it that way.
这原始佛教也是对释迦牟尼佛不说他是一个化身，就是说他从另外一体佛发出来的，他们不是这样说的。
In the source Buddhist teachings, I mean, Shakyamuni was a person who, over many lifetimes, developed the karma necessary to become a Buddha in this lifetime, lived in his life here, and then died. But he was a real person who died. That's the way it's presented. It's not an emanation from something else.
那原始佛教他们对释迦牟尼佛说他是就是普通的人，他不是从什么大佛化出来的或化出来的一个特别的名字的人，而就是一个普通跟大家一样的一个众生。
Sorry, I lost my train of thought, but I got it back. This is an important distinction. As you will talk later, I don't think we're going to get to it this time, but next time we're going to talk. What I want to do now, as you'll see right away, we're going to start talking about the source Buddha's depiction of the Buddha and how that sort of leads up to this kind of scheme that became very important in Mahayana. But you may know that when the Mahayana came along, and especially in the Prajnaparamita Sutra, but even more so in the Lotus Sutra, there's this whole story told about how the original Buddha was actually an expedient means that was being used to teach the people of that time who weren't ready yet for the Lotus Sutra.
我们等一下就是要先从这个原始佛教的观念慢慢就了解它怎么会慢慢到北川佛教变成这三个名字。对，这个在就是北川佛教，比方说《莲花经》这些经，他们也是提到佛，好像佛就是一种方便法。什么方便法？方便就是可以传法，它就是传法的一种比较方便的方法。
Okay, all right. Well, what I'd like to do now, this is the basic theory of the three bodies of the Buddha. It's fundamental to the Mahayana, very, very important. Grows out of the source Buddhist teachings in a certain way, which I want to turn to now, and then starting next week and so on. So we're going to be talking, I think, for the rest of today, we're going to be talking about who the Buddha was and what he was thought of as being in the source Buddhist teachings, the Nikayas. And then next week we'll be talking about how it changed, and you know the ways in which it changed when the Mahayana came along.
所以我现在要讲这三佛的三身。今天要讲原始佛教，他们说佛，他们说形容佛是什么？然后下个星期我就是讲到现在我们那个大乘佛教所形容所讲的这个佛的三身的意义是什么。
OK, you're on board. Okay. Now what I decided to do, this is just I don't know, I just had the idea it might be fun. I decided that one thing we can do now, I wanted to read, this is my copy of the Digha Nikaya. I wanted to read the famous sutra that's called the Buddha's Last Days, or the Parinibbana Sutra. It's the longest of the Pali Sutras, and it talks about the Buddha's last days. This is where they're saying what happened when he was going along, and you know, he's teaching, doing this, doing that, then suddenly this happened, that, and eventually he dies. He passes away at the end. This is the Buddha's last days. What I want to do is sort of go through a little bit, talk about some of the incidents that occur in it, and have us all just sort of think about what kind of person that would be who would do what the Buddha did. You know, how is this Buddha being presented to us? What is he like, really?
我等一下也要把这本经，就是佛比较长一点的开示，我要念给你们听几篇。 但是讲这个之前，我还是要讲这个《涅槃经》。《涅槃经》就是形容佛释迦牟尼佛他临时所讲的、所留下来的这些开示。所以我先讲这个，然后就慢慢就介绍这个题目。
Now when you read this thing, and you should if you have a chance, it's about 50 pages long. It's, I heard, the longest of the Pali Suttas. But it's very interesting. If you're interested in Buddhism, you ought to know about it, I think. So anyway, when we read this, the Buddha is, you can see already in the way the Buddha is talked about in this, that he has different aspects. In some ways, he's sort of like any other human being.In other ways, though, he's obviously not like any other human being. He's got qualities that most human beings do not have.
那我们要看这个经的时候呢，我就希望大家都看这个经，它是50页长，听说就是巴利文那个巴利文经最长的一个经。但是我们看这个经的时候，我们又可以发现到这一个释迦牟尼佛他有好像两方面，一方面他就是像一个普通的人，那另外一方面他也有他的特别的一般人都没有，所以我们看的时候要 注意到这两方面。
OK, you probably know the basic story, and this story thatThere's a way of thinking about the Buddha that does basically take him as being just an ordinary human being. And this way of thinking about the Buddha is actually pretty popular these days among people who are interested in Buddhism. Now,
已经知道这个佛那个最后几天的这个他的那个经历。
Okay, well, this story basically it's pretty straightforward. The Buddha was born the son of a king. He was raised in a very privileged situation, in which he had almost no contact with human suffering.
这个故事大家比较熟悉，我出生的时候就是国王的儿子，他是很有富有的孩子，也是很有富有的生活过的，他跟一般的那个仆没什么接触。
He eventually had a married and had a child, but then he had some experiences that made him understand that suffering not only existsbut is in fact pervasive in human experience.
他以后就结婚生小孩，但是他有几个经验就让他知道这个苦真正的存在，而且 不只是存在，而且就是生活上是个基本的一种一种东西。
Well, when he discovered this, it shook him up. He woke him up to reality in a way that he had never been awakened before. He became determined to find a solution to the problem of suffering.
他一发现到这个道理，他就吃一惊。他想用他的一辈子，就是找一个解决法，去解决问题。
Hey, he then left home, as the saying goes, and determined to find a solution. He studied with two well-known masters, but left them, well-known masters of the time, but realized after a while that neither one of them was really going to be able to give him what he wanted.
他就离开家，他就找两个好老师。要跟他们学习，但是希望他可以解决人的痛苦，但是他过一段时间他就发现这两个老师不会教他什么。
Okay, well, then, did ascetic practices, assume you know what those are, very strict, very severe practices in which he denied himself food except for very, very small amounts, and trying to tame his body in a certain way. He was doing this kind of practice with five buddies, I guess, who were also involved in it.
以后他叫苦行，苦行就是他都吃一点点东西，他就是要训练他的身体。他是跟另外一个苦行者一起过这种苦的生活。
Eventually, however, he realized that asceticism wasn't working for him either.
到最后，他发现这个苦行也对他没有什么用。
So he gave it up.His friends sort of snubbed him after that, thinking he was a backslider in the practice.
So he had to 放弃了，不苦行。那他这些不苦行者，他就是不理他，觉得他就是已经决定不要求证明了。
Well, he then eventually said, you know, he strengthened himself by getting some food and so on, and then sat down.Under the bodhi tree and vowed that he was going to sit there until he had the answer he wanted, and or else just die sitting there, I guess. He swore he wouldn't get up until he had the answer.
他就开始吃东西，就可以加强他的身体。然后他就是找那个菩提树，在菩提树下打坐。他发誓，他还没有找到。解决人生的苦行，他才不会起来。
All right, now some of you know there are magical ornaments to this story that, in the way it's usually told, the way it's told sometimes. But as far as you know, this story is what I just set forth. There's nothing overtly.Magical or religious, really, about that story, is there? That could be just a completely ordinary human being going through that process, right?
那大家大概知道我讲的这个故事，多数还有一些比较是魔术性的或者宗教性的方面，我没有提到。那不提到这些方面，我们看这个故事。任何人都会经过这种经历，对不对？没有什么特别的宗教性。
In fact, you know, this view of the Buddha, I think, is very popular among modern educated people, people who are a little bit nervous about anything that seems to be religious or have any kind of magical or supernatural qualities to it.A lot of people feel that way these days. And yet, some of them are still attracted to the Buddha and to the idea of Buddhism because I think it's because of this simple version of the story where he's presented as being basically just a very wise person, a wise and compassionate man who went through a process which allowed him to discover a method that could help people overcome their suffering.
那这个故事没有这个宗教性，对现代的这个读书人，特别是对他有意思，因为他们觉得任何人都可以经过这种经历，而他得到这个真理，所以虽然他们比较怕宗教性的任何东西，实际上他们对佛很有兴趣，因为他们觉得这是。都会发生，但是没有什么意外的、特别的一种没有道理的东西。
I did a Google search on the question, "Was the Buddha a god?" Just type that into Google. Got thousands and thousands of replies, and scrolling through them, a whole lot of them.They were basically answered it along the lines, no, he wasn't a god, he was just a wise and compassionate man who discovered something about human existence and taught it to people and blah, blah, blah.
我对这个问题的这个 这个好故事，没有什么宗教性的，而大家都喜欢的这种题目，我对它很有兴趣。所以我去电脑网做那个骨骼检查，这个骨骼检查问佛是不是一个神，我不是一个神，看大家怎么样回答这个行业观念是什么。好多好多都是说没有，他不是神，他就是一个非常聪明有智慧有这个慈悲心的人。
Some of you may know, I'm sure you probably do, Peter Lim has talked to us about this several times, but there's a substantial movement in modern psychology that uses various techniques that are very reminiscent of the techniques that Buddhism teaches in order to help people overcome their psychological problems.
你们也许知道，你们大概比较熟悉这个 Peter Lim 博士，他说的这个现在的心理学有很多都是用佛教心理学来帮助他们的病人。
Now, you know, the psychologists, I presume, are not presenting any sort of magical or supernatural kinds of ideas to their patients. They're justtrying to get the patients to do some of the same sorts of exercises that Buddhism tries to get practitioners to do. Primarily, one of the biggest is, of course, mindfulness. You know, if you know anything about Buddhism, you know that one of the biggest things the Buddha taught was try to be mindful. Try to know what's going on, right? The four foundations of mindfulness is considered by many people to be the most important of the source Buddhist sutras. A lot of people would say this is the one where they really say, you know, what the key ideas are. And what is the four foundations of mindfulness? Well, it's simply a matter of being aware of what's actually going on. You know, try to keep your attention focused on what's going on, where you are. And that means outside of yourself, and in a way, even more importantly, inside, what's going on in your own head.Watch your thinking. Be aware of what you were thinking about.
我相信现在的心理学家不是用什么宗教性的方法来治疗他们的病人，但是他们可以用的是原始佛教所提出来的一些道理的一些观念，比方说正念。正念是非常重要，就是说我们要回我们在任何地方，就是要知道正在做什么，要完全想到正在做的，而不再想到其他的东西，这个就是叫正念。我相信这个心理学家大概是可以用这个正念的一个方法来治疗病人。
I know that a cognitive therapist, as they're called, they have a whole technique where they tell their patients to take a carry a notebook around with them all day.Trying to be mindful of what they're thinking about all the time. When they notice themselves having negative thoughts about themselves, they say, stop and write it down. Write down that you have that thought. And I think the time of day when you have that, right? And their idea is that part of the reason why people become depressed and things like that, you know, depression, it comes from a sort ofWhen the mind sort of turns on itself, and you know, if you're walking around all day talking to yourself, what a loser, what a loser you are, right? You know, if you really are thinking that kind of thing about yourself all the time, which is very common and understandable given the way our society works, you know, it's a competitive society. It's easy to feel like you're not quite measuring up to everything, right? You know, and you walk through the world.You start talking to yourself that way, eventually, these cognitive therapists say it starts to have a really pathological effect. You can become really depressed.
我认识一些心理医师，他们有一个方法治疗他们的病人。他们就叫他们到哪里去带一个笔记本跟一支笔。那每一次他们开始不正念，开始都想到其他的，对他们自己是不好的这种感觉。像他们自己觉得是一个失败者，什么不会成功，他们应该把这个观念都写下。 这样子他们就可以开始记录每一件不好的一件事情。那这个有什么好呢？因为我相信大家都偶尔都会有这种感觉，就是好像你的心里就是抵抗自己，就是你自己就会想到你自己的不好的地方。那你要自己可以先发现到你有在做这种事情，你才可以开始了解，然后就可以开始抵抗。
Well, that's a very Buddhist method.
这是佛教性的啊。
Well, Buddha, watch the thoughts that come up in your mind, and don't react to the thoughts inappropriately.
佛的意思是说，你要看你的心里在想什么，而你不要做一个不适合的反应给他们的其实那个事情。
Okay. Well, anyway, now this, all of this is, what is all this? This is sort of the Buddha as Nirmanakaya, the Buddha who's in an ordinary reality, dealing with human beings, trying to deal with them in a manner that will be helpful to them, which, you know, it might mean that, you know, if the Buddha, a real Buddha, appeared in a society where people were very much against any kind of religious thinking, or, you know, they'd just been praying, no, we can't, you know, everything very, very much focused on sort of materialistic things, that Buddha might teach in a materialistic way. If that's what those people need, well, it's expedient means. That's what that Buddha would do, right?
那这个可以说是这个佛的化身，是对待人。也许他来人间就是要渡人。那比方说他去一个社会，这个社会对宗教都没有什么感觉，容易都不喜欢宗教，他们是物质方面都非常着重。那这个原因，这个佛就会用物质方面来渡他们，这是一种方便法。因为大家都是对物质、对东西很崇拜，很觉得很重要，所以他就是用这个观念慢慢就渡他们。
Okay, I'll confess to you that this story is not. When I first started to get interested in Buddhism, I sort of thought about it this way. You know, the other more religious, more those aspects, I didn't think about that much. And I think that if somebody had tried to shove those aspects down my throat at that time, it might have turned me off. It might have gone somewhere else. So
I can 很坦白地跟你们讲，这个我开始对佛教有兴趣的时候，我觉得这个故事蛮有意思。我都觉得他就是很坦白地说出来，佛一个人怎么变一个佛，我觉得有道理。那如果有一个人他要用其他的比较宗教性的道理来讲，也许我就是不肯听，那就完全放弃这个观念。
Alright, but now, that's not the only thing that we see in the actual, source Buddhist materials, of course, as you all know. The Buddha that we see there is sort of like this.Person that we've talked about before, and in a way that might be the most interesting aspect of him for a lot of people, but he also has other characteristics.
那我们看这些巴利文的这些原始佛经，很多都是讲我好像他这是一个人，就是这个人就是这样帮助众生，但是实际上除了这个以外。
The fact is, we can't really ever forget when we're reading this is that the Buddha is presented as a fully realized Buddha. So, sure, he in a sense is an ordinary human being, but he's gone through some transformation. The person before they become a Buddha and the person after they become a Buddha.There's got to be some difference, right? Some difference.
但是我们也不能忘记， 他不只是一个人，他是完全开悟的，完全变化的一种百分之百的果，跟一般人不一样。
Okay, he is in that sense a sort of exemplar of the Dharma that he's teaching.
是这样子，你可以说他所开示的佛法，他所开示佛法的一个好例，代表这个佛法。
His understanding of the Dharma is more than just intellectual.
他所了解的佛法不只是读书性。
He has, and this is a word you've heard, the English word, he has realized. You've heard it, but you don't really know what it means, right? that's how I feel about it. He has realized the truth in his own mind and body. Now, anybody who's studied Buddhism for a while,You always hear from the teachers, you know, why do we have to meditate? What do we have to say here? I like so. You know, that kind of thing, right? Well, the teachers say, look, just understanding the Dharma intellectually isn't really enough to create the transformation that we want to create. You know, you want to really get over your suffering, just intellectual power is not necessarily enough to do that.
我对佛法不只是了解，像读书明白它的意思，他已经经历过，他已经发现过这些真理。跟我们说哦，你发现一件事情，是不只是那么简单，就是真正的有这个经验，他知道，他经历过这些真理。所以你要变佛，你要开悟，你就是要经历。这些道理，你就是要了解这些道理。像如果你是个学生，你要学打坐，那你打坐说哦，为什么要打坐？我都腿好痛，我都不想打坐。那你的老师会说，你要开悟，你要知道这些真理，你不只是要懂，而是要经历，要有这种发现。
A good teaching for this that I've used many times, many of you have heard it, but it comes from Joko Beck, who is the head of the San Diego Zen Sanctuary. I think she's retired now. But she used to say, it's like, if all you do is think about it, if it's just an intellectual thing and nothing more, it's like trying to tell an alcoholic to stop drinking. Now you all know, if you know anything at all about alcoholism, you know, alcoholics, a lot of alcoholics know that being an alcoholic is not good for them. Their intellectual understanding of that is just fine. They've just had a lot of experience. They know, this is not good for me, right? But do they stop drinking? Very often the answer is no. They don't stop drinking despite that intellectual understanding.So what's going on here? The intellectual understanding is not enough to actually solve that problem. In the same way, when we're teaching Dharma, you know, people want to have this kind of Buddhist transformation, intellectual understanding isn't enough to do it because you have all this habit energy, all these deeply ingrained, you know, vexations that come upall the time, even though you know that there are vexations, they come up anyway, right? And it just, you know, it's just like that. So what do you have to do? You have to find some methods that are more powerful than just thinking about it to try to really get to the root of the problem.
有一位李谦夫者，三地一个日本禅佛中心的人，他说只了解这个佛法的道理，好像是对一个香烟酒的人说不要喝酒。那相信大概这个人他已经知道喝酒对他不好，所以不是说不了解的问题， 但是他还没有经历过这个不喝酒的这个道理，他经历过这个才会真正的了解，真正会放弃这个酒不再喝。所以我们都一样，我们就是要开悟，要有辩驳。我们不只是可以坐那边看书了解这个道理，我们还是想一个办法真正的经历发现这个道理的真理。
All right, well, the Buddha went through some kind of transformation that was more than just intellectual. He really changed in some way or another.
所以佛的他经过这个变化，不只是读书方面的变化，他真正的本性有一个变化。
Some of you may remember the story when after he has his enlightenment, he walks somewhere and runs into the five ascetics that he had, been working with before, practicing with before. They see him coming. And the way it's described, they can tell that he's different, right? They see him coming and they all go, what happened to him, right? Something different.
你们大概听过这个故事，就是佛开悟了以后，大概是慢慢走到他那个五个苦行者，他以前跟他们一起的五个苦行者的地方。那他们看到佛过来，一看就知道有个变化，就看他的身体知道他跟以前不一样。
Okay. Now, the one thing where you see some of this, in the Abhidharma, Abhidharma is a collection of teachings that are like shastras. They're like, a manual, handbooks that go along with the sutras in source Buddhism. They're very, very precise, very, very deep. They are deep. Some days try to start studying the Abhidharma and you'll realize, wow, these guys are trying to explain everything. They're very, very deep. But in the Abhidharma, they talk about how a Buddha is different from other people because a Buddha has 18 dharmas that other people don't have. And that's dharma with a small d.
那有一本书叫《阿毗达尔玛》，这就是其他佛教读书人他们就是评论佛经，他们在里面讲的说，一个佛一个人变佛，他跟别人不一样，为什么呢？因为一个人如果他变佛的话，他有一个十八，就是说法，就是说佛法。
Now there are 18 of these dharmas, 17 of them are types of cognition. Cognition means how you perceive the world, cognizing things. The Buddha sees the world differently from the way ordinary people do. Because the Buddha has ultimate wisdom. That's the main thing about it. He's awake and you're not. He sees things differently. He's got these different dharmas of cognition. Now I forgot. Dharma, that is one of the most difficult words in Buddhist studies. It has at least 7 different meanings according to some of the books I've been reading. And it can be very hard to tell which one they mean. In a given circumstance. The 2 biggest that you'll see are Dharma with a capital D. That refers just to the teachings themselves. The teachings, all the Buddhist teachings. You'll see that a lot, that's good. But the other one is a dharma can refer to any kind of phenomena, even tiny little mental phenomena are dharmas. And so what the Abhidharma here is saying is that there's some kind of change going on in the brain of a Buddha, and it becomes a Buddha. It gets these dharmas that other people don't have.
所以这十八个性的现象，就是七是关于他的想法，一个人的想法。那一个佛，他所看的东西，他所想的，跟一般人都不一样，已经有这个变化。所以就是十七个方法，他会看东西，跟我们一般的老百姓、一般的人看的完全不一样。现在也要解释这个词佛法跟法。这个我不知道中文跟英文有没有什么不一样，但是在英文这个佛法就是 Dharma， 就是大地开头，这个大地开头就是说佛法，但是另外还有一个小地开头，小地开头的 Dharma 就是普通的这个现象，任何发生的事情就是叫做 Dharma。 那实际上是这个字 Dharma 就起码这有七个解释法，但就是这两个解释法最多。
All right, the 18th of the different dharmas that the Buddha has is compassion. The Buddha has great compassion. He's more compassionate than you are. More compassionate than I am, but that's easy. But I mean, he's got real compassion. Okay. So what are the differences? There are all these cognitions. That's wisdom, right?He's got a kind of wisdom. He sees things more clearly than we do. And he's also got compassion. You know, this is Buddhism. Wisdom, compassion, right? He's got more compassion. He's got a level of compassion that is greater than the average person has.
So this 18个现象指17就是讲他的这个智慧。那第18个是讲他的慈悲。他的慈悲跟我们所讲的慈悲完全不一样，我们这根本没有，大概没有办法了解，这是最高的、最高的不变的、不会变的这种慈悲心。所以，一个佛，他智慧跟慈悲，这是最高的这种现象，我们就是要想办法明白。
Okay, now all of this is we're talking about Dharmakaya.Right? This stuff, this is the Buddha, even in the source Buddhist tradition, sort of his Dharmakaya, his actual dharmas that make up his being are different, because he's a Buddha, okay?
So, 现在提到的就是第一个身，就是法身，他的法身，他所被创造的一些现象跟一般人的不同。
Okay, now the Sambhogakaya, the reward body, is sort of related to the magic and enjoyment and so on of supernatural powers that a Buddha can develop.
那第二个报身就是讲他的神通，就是一个佛可以得到一些神通。
Both the source Buddhism and Mahayana Buddhism believe that advanced practitioners can develop supernatural powers of various types. These things are called abhinja or vidis in Sanskrit.
那很多人都相信还没有变佛，但是你的修行已经是最高，非常高，非常高的修行，你也可以得到一些神通。这些神通都是被解释过的，在这个经里面。
Okay, these powers are generally thought to be byproducts of advanced meditative states.
这些神通都是你非常高级打坐禅坐这个情况之副产品。
They include the ability to emanate a mind-made body from one's own body. If you're really good at this, you can sort of make a being, a seeming being, appear over there. If you're really good at this. Notice, you know, Manakaya is an emanation body. Okay, when we get to, when we start talking about the lotus, I mean, basically what they're going to be saying is there's a universal Buddha that underlies everything. And that universal Buddha used its powers to emanate a Buddha into this world, because people in this world were ready for that Buddha to come. And that Buddha is Shakyamuni.
有这些神通，有一个神通，就是有这个非常非常，就是佛，或者非常高的身体，你们这样看到，就可以好像到那边去用心创造一个身体，就变化出来的身体。是这个变化，好像第三个那个化身，那个你们还可以就是化身，化身就是那个这个身，就是佛的那个人的身体。 那有一个观念是说，有一个这个宇宙性的佛，这是一个大佛，他就是用他的这个报身这个神通的办法来造这个释迦牟尼佛这个身体出现在我们人间，因为他们觉得我们这个世界已经到期可以需要一个佛来度。
Okay, now Shifu talks about these powers in his book, Things Pertaining to Bodhi, one of his most recent publications. It's part of a set of teachings that are called the 37 Steps to Enlightenment, which is a teaching from the Source Buddhist tradition. It's not really Mahayana, it comes out of the Source Buddhism. But Shifu taught about the Source Buddhist teachings a lot, and you know, he spent a long time, many, many lectures, going through this entire thing of 37 steps, and that we now have a book out that talks about that. Well, he talks about these magical powers in that book, because the magical powers come up when you're talking about the 37 steps.
在最近出版的一本师父的书所提出这个三十七道品，这个三十七道品实际上是原始佛教原来的巴黎人的佛教的一个经，但是师父对这个非常有兴趣。那这个三十七道品里面也是讲的这些神通这个现象，所以师父就是写的关于这个也是研究了这一方面，也是。
Alright, now they're a byproduct, that's what you have to understand. The powers of themselves are not important. They're a byproduct of meditative practices, which are called the four steps to magical powers. But these are, it's basically just a kind of samadhi style meditation. You're trying to gain control over the way over your own thinking. Okay.
那实际上这些神通不是这么重要。这个可以造这个神通的意思，就是说最重要的意思是说你可以控制自己的心，你可以用你自己的心，没有什么给来给去的思想。 那这里三十七道品里面也有一部分叫思如意足，思如意足的意思就是说神通，就是怎么可以创造这个神通。所以这个三十七道品里面也有这个，但是我们要知道，神通并不是这么非常重要的事情，就是我们可以自己控制我们自己的心，就是我们。All right,
so basically you should ignore these things, the powers themselves. I mean, for us, it's Shifu definitely advocated to just ignore it. if what you're trying to do is gain control over your own mind, so you can have samadhi power in that sense. If you notice that you're getting some kind of seemingly supernatural kind of effects while you're doing that, ignore the supernatural effects, because the real point is to gain the control over your own mind. These magical powers don't really lead to the elimination of suffering. And in fact, because they're so interesting to people, they can cause trouble. They can be troublemakers. And in fact, in many schools, if monk or a nun were determined to have been trying to do this kind of thing, they would be expelled. They'd kick you out. So these things are interesting, but don't mess around with them. It won't do you any good.
所以我们对这个神通就会有概念，这个有这个超级自然的权利，我们也许会觉得很有意思，但是实际上它不会帮助我们开悟。所以师父他说，就根本不要管。如果你已经是那么高那么高的一个修行者，你也许会发现有一些神通会开始，你就最好不要理他，你不要管，因为你觉得。你对这个神通一定是有兴趣，你就开始管这个神通，而不是管你的心，而且会创造一些 不好的结果。以前在其他的宗派，其他的佛教派，他们有的是说，如果有一个人开始神通，他被开除，不可以留下，因为为什么？因为你的打坐禅坐的目的就是最后目的就是开悟，不是搞这个神通的事。
All right, then having been said, I have to tell you, when I came to the lecture, when Shifu was giving this lecture on these four powers, right, this place was packed. you couldn't find a seat. There's so many people came because they wanted to hear about magical powers. You know, that's what it was. Come on. And Shifu joked about that, but, you know, that was what it was. It was really jammed.
Just 坦白地跟你们讲。有一次师父要讲这个丝奴一族，他要讲这个题目，我们这个中心都满不是人，到处的人站着坐的都是，好多人都来，为什么？因为他们大家都是对这个超级自然的权利蛮有兴趣。
Okay, well anyway, I'm serious about that. You know, understand what Buddhism is really trying to do, and it's not really trying basically to, you know, give you the ability to read other people's minds or things like that. That's not the point. So don't worry about it. And, you know, could be dangerous.
所以我们看这个佛教不是说神通，不是说你可以看人家心里怎么想，我觉得并不是这意思，佛教根本不是这样。
Now, that having been said, when you read the sutras here, the Buddha does, in these sutras, do magical sort of things. He does things like that on occasion. He always seems to have a sort of teaching idea about it. I mean, in this one, there's one that happens is he's leaving this city with his monks, and they come to the Ganges River. And the river is really, really high. The water is very, very high. And they say, all these people are there trying to build rafts and boats and so on to get across the river. And then it basically says, and then the Buddha just made a real quick little gesture. And after that gesture alone, he and all of his monks, his whole retinue, were all the way across the river. Boom. Some kind of magical thing that the Buddha was able to do. Look, it's in here. I didn't make it up. It's in here.
在这个巴利文的经也有一些那个佛可以做神通的现象。比方说有一次佛跟他的那个弟子，他们就是要去离开什么地方回去他们的住的地方，他碰到大河，他们要过河。但是没有船，所以他们要开始那个造船，就可以把那么多人都给渡，可以过这个河。 那一个佛他就是动一个手，突然他们就可以过那个法律问题。所以这些经里面也有这个佛用他的神通，不是我自己说出来，你可以看自己看，真的是在里面，不是我自己编的故事。
Okay, he then uses it as a little bit of a teaching device. He then turns to his monks and says, you see any human beings struggling on one shore of the river to get across the river, but a true practitioner can just get across the river without struggling in that way. It's a sort of reference to the famous metaphor, you know, that you hear in Buddhist Malakaya.We are on one shore, we're over here on this shore, the unhappy shore, and there's this big river or ocean or whatever, and then over there on the other side is the other shore, which is the happy shore. And we're all trying to get over to the other side. So this whole thing is a sort of, you know, it's meant to, I guess, symbolize the idea that if, you know, Buddhism is,And if you really understand the Dhamma, Buddhism is, will get you to the other shore, and you don't have to struggle in the way that the other people are struggling.
但是这个佛实行这个神通有一个目的，他就是用来教他的弟子，说你看我们你们普通的人，这么有斗争，这么辛苦，要从这边要过到另外一边。要过这个大的河，过大的大的那个海洋，什么大的一滴水，你可以知道，如果你是真正的很高的一个修行者，你就很简单很容易可以过。那这个就是一种隐喻，就是我们以前就是大概大家都很熟悉这个故事，从此岸到彼岸，对不对？也就是此岸就是苦，然后彼岸就是那个涅槃。就是什么真正的那个真理，所以他就是用这个方法来教他的弟子学习佛法，佛法就可以带你到彼岸，你就可以得到开，就可以开悟。
Okay, so that all of that is, you know, that's the Sambhogakaya, aspect of the Buddha, which does exist. You do see in these sutras.Buddha does magic sometimes. Why does he do it? Well, usually it's to teach. Now you see, if you look at the sutra, how does the Buddha spend most of his time? By far, he spends most of his time teaching the Dharma. That is by far where he spends most of his time doing.
So, these books also.佛变魔术的一些故事，但是我们看这些经可以知道，或怎么样画他时间，他最多的时间，90%多的时间就是教这个佛法。
Each time he travels to many different towns. He's traveling around with Ananda and some of the other monks.Lots of little towns. Each time he comes to a new town, he tells Ananda, okay, Ananda, go and find all the monks that are around, monks and nuns and practitioners that are around here. Gather them together and I'll give them a Dharma talk.
所以那时候佛在人间的时候，他是常常从一个村落到另外一个村落去，他去的就是要开示，所以他带他的弟子。他们到一个新的城市或者新的村落的时候，他就会跟那个阿难和其他的弟子说，现在要去找所有这些出家人，叫他们来听这个开示。
Then they come and he gives a Dharma talk. And the topics of the Dharma talks are almost all straight out of the most basic, teachings of Buddhism that you've all heard about. The Four Noble Truths.Four foundations of mindfulness, you know, precepts, meditation, and wisdom, you know, the path, precepts, meditation, wisdom. And in one, he does talk about the 37 steps to enlightenment. He sometimes teaches on less well-known, topics like, seven principles to prevent decline in a community. This is interesting. I just want to tell you this because it's interesting to me. the way this thing starts, this is a king who knows the Buddha is planning to attack a neighboring town. The king tells two of his ministers, go and talk to Shakyamuni and find out if he thinks we'll be successful if we attack his town. And just think about that right there. I mean, you read that and you say, why would you send somebody to the Buddha to ask a question like that? You know, the Buddha is a peaceful guy. He's a peace-loving kind of guy, right? You know? What are they doing? It's pretty strange. It's in here. I think I sort of understand. The guys come and they tell the Buddha what their guy wants, what the king wants. The Buddha doesn't say a word to them. What he does is he calls Ananda comes over and he says to them, and the Buddha starts asking Ananda some questions. Remember when I talked to you about the seven ways for a community to prevent decline? Ananda says yes. He says, do you know this community across the river, which is the one they were going to attack, right? And Ananda says yes. And then he goes through the list of the activities. He says, do you think that they are performing this? And Ananda says, yes, I think they are. I think they are. Just goes through it all. You know, yes. All of a sudden, the two ministers say, okay, we're sure enough. We know this isn't going to work. Right? And they go running back to the king. And as they leave, the guy says, we won't be able to take them by force. We'll have to try to do it through diplomacy. That is what's in here. It's a kind of peculiar thing, but there it is.
那他会到什么地方给那些出家人讲这个佛法？多数都是讲普遍的，我们都已经听过了几次的，像啊四念处、三十七道品这一类的。但他偶尔也会讲一些比较少听到的，有一个就是很随便的翻译，就是七个方法可以避免一个村落会衰落。那我觉得这个，我对这个特别有兴趣，因为按照我所看到的，他有一次他去一个地方，他认识那边那个国王，那个国王想打击对方的一个村落，另外一个城市，所以他想问那个佛。有最好的方法可以打赢，可以打败他们是什么方法？这我其实觉得好奇怪。这个佛他就是要和平，不是说打战的。他怎么会想到要去这个问佛怎么样打战，怎么样杀人的？没有道理。但是结果是这样子，那个佛就是告诉我跟阿难讲，他说你记不记得以前我是讲过。有七个方法可以避免一个村落衰落的，就没有了。他说有对啊，所以他就是讲这些那个国王才发现到，哎，我没有办法打击这个，我没有办法打败他们，最好不要用这个方法，用讲和平用其他的方法来解决我们这个问题。所以他就是用这个开，就是这种开始，就是要教人不要打。而要谈到我们的才可以得到一个好结果。
Okay, I think I'm going to stop. We got 2 minutes. Do you have any questions? I'm happy to answer questions, but there's a little more to go on this part. We're doing this next week too, and we will get through with the source rules and stuff pretty fast.And move on into the Mahayana. For various, every major school of the Mahayana has a version of the three bodies of the Buddha. And it's very instructive to know what they are and how they differ and so on. We'll try to get that done next week. Does anybody have any questions?
What's the one thing you would like us to take away from today's talk?
他问的问题是，我今天听你的演讲，你希望我们哪一方面最重要的一种道理要带回家？
Like a gathering. All right, I don't know. What do I want you to take away? I want you to take away from what I've just been talking about, from this stuff we're going through this sutra, I just want you to take away a sense, an interest in reading the sutra and looking at how it presents the Buddha. And remember, this is source Buddhism. This is the earliest stuff. And some of it is, I have to tell you, when I look at it, it seems a little strange. I don't quite understand how it fits in exactly. But, you know, that's what's there. The other thing that I want you to take away is that the Dharma is the most important thing. The Buddha spends most of his time, by far, doing what we do here in Dharma class, only much better.
什么要带回家的，就是说希望你听到我这几演讲，你可以自己回家自己看这个原始这个经，因为我看到我也是很有意思，也有一些奇怪，实际上我看到还没有个把握，现在看，就是希望大家现在有一点兴趣，可以自己回去看这些经。
第二个是我们要知道，佛法是最重要的。佛用他最多时间讲佛法。Okay. All right. Thanks for coming. I hope it was helpful to you to some extent.
谢谢各位，希望这个会帮助你们多了解佛法。It's
the first time I ever talk about this thing.
So,
I'll get better with more
practice.
And if you want to do good, I think I better get it. Right, the learning is very hard. I can see how, you know, it must be very hard. Technical terms and suddenly. Anyway, thanks a lot.